Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play dude.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
It's toy department time, boys and girls. It just turned Friday.
For me,
anyway. Yeah,
how's I guess
it's still Thursday where you are. It's delightful here in the Midwest. It was like 70s and sunny today, which would be awesome if people were allowed to be outside for.
Yeah, I mean that's exactly what it was like here. I experienced it thrice as I walked my dog. Dog's been getting an extra walk these days, you know, since we're all at home and stir crazy. It's nice to go out for an extra midday walk that he's not used to.
My dog has sadly been gimpy. I don't know why she's like stiff or whatever, but so I've been trying to take it easier on her on the walks, which has not necessarily been to my benefit. You know what I mean? So
I hear that.
It's a bummer. Not a bummer. All the content that we have got to move through on this show, there was a lot happening.
Mas content. That's not. I don't know Spanish. But what's the word for like lots of?
Mucho. Wouldn't mucho content, right?
Yeah.
Mas content would be more content.
Yeah, I knew it was wrong when I said it.
I can totally have that wrong. It's not like I know anything about Spanish.
No, I think you're right. Mucho content sounds right.
Yeah, I feel like that's.
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
It's a Taco Bell menu worth of stuff today. speaking of Taco Bell, should we start at Top Chef then?
Okay.
We talked last week in the show. I was very excited for Restaurant Wars.
Weren't we all, Derek?
And sort of disappointed when it turned out they weren't really doing Restaurant Wars, but I actually wound up liking this episode.
Yeah. I mean, I honestly didn't love this episode, but maybe. So many of the concepts I just did not think were particularly good. The restaurant concepts.
Well,
now, I will say this. I am very excited about the two that got picked.
I am too. And I also sort of felt like that was revealing, right? In that, you know, everybody still left on the show can cook.
Yes.
But you sort of see like what goes into a successful restaurant is about more than cooking, right?
Oh, yeah. And so much,
you know, it's about a concept and an idea and an understanding. And it was like to me, like this episode really brought a lot of that out.
I
think was interesting.
I think that's true. I mean, as you probably imagined, another thing that annoyed me about this episode was like, I mean, okay, I get it. Eric didn't do good. And he probably deserved to lose given the scenario. But Stephanie lost that challenge. She just had immunity.
By the way, maybe she should have named the restaurant Immunity. It was a pretty savage
that
Judge
was a
Byrne.
Brutal Judge Byrne. But they were just as harsh about, I mean, Tom saying, I took one bite of that duck and pushed it away was pretty savage as well about Eric.
It was one of the more telegraphed eliminations, I thought. Like when Tom was describing the situation, I was like, oh, Eric's going home.
It was one of those where when they go, I think we have our decision, you're like, yeah, I know what it is. But honestly, how many times does Leanne have to finish in the bottom before they get her ass out of here? Come on now.
See, it's coming. It's coming. Like, you know what I mean? Like, she's not gonna bottom her way all the way into the final. Like, it's just not happening, Grid. So
I hope you're right. I hope you're right. Because right now, I mean, to me, there's a three-way favorite situation that's overwhelming. And I believe Kevin pointed out that nobody besides Kevin, Melissa, and Greg have won any of the elimination challenges.
I think that might be true. And that's where I would go. I still don't want to rule out Voltaggio because, like I said, I think he's lying. I said this earlier. I think he's lying in the weeds. And I did think this challenge is pretty revealing for him, too, in that he's so smart and refined that he tried to make a casual concept because it was the thing missing from his portfolio. And it came out like fine, super fine dining, which was the reason he didn't do great, but the man makes great food. And I think he's an artist. So you're right. At this point, you have to put him behind the other three just in terms of results and what we've seen on the plate. But as long as he's in the competition, I think he's a threat.
Well, you know, what's great about this is every chef on here is good enough to win if they get hot, you know, so to speak.
Yeah.
But I think it's pretty overwhelming how far those three are ahead of the rest of the pack. And maybe Melissa has – if I was trying to pick a winner, she might have the slight edge just because she has been so – like, ultimately, this is probably coming down to fine dining, and she's been exceptional.
She's really the way that she has leveled up. She was very good on her season, but I think her food has just been incredible.
Well, and almost everyone else on this show has had one of the two things happen where either something looks beautiful and then they're like, this tastes like garbage, or they're like, that doesn't look great, but then it tastes good. Except Melissa.
Yeah.
Virtually everything she's put down has been like, oh my God, look at that. And then they taste it and they're like, Michelin stars all around. She really, like, her level has been consistently gangbusters since the start.
Yeah, I agree with that. But I think, you're right. I think at this point, if I'm just going on who has cooked the best so far, really is only the first half of the season, right? Like, once you get the rest of our awards, that's when it gets, like, it's her. But I think Kevin has not only cooked well, I think his food has been very accessible.
Yeah,
you know what
I
mean?
And they're each authentic to themselves, too, which I think is such a huge part of winning Top Chef.
Yeah. And as a guy who's eaten in many of his restaurants, I knew this was going to be a good challenge for him.
But I got to tell you, man, Gregory, I'm so excited to see the Haitian restaurant. Although I do think he kind of put his own team behind the eight ball. Not that it should have affected the way he handled it or anything. You know, I think he did what he did and he did it well and correctly. But Kevin's menu is going to be much more accessible to all the chefs in terms of making it.
Yeah, that was my first thought. Was like, oh man, Haitian's going to be hard for people to cook.
It's not like a common thing. I bet he's the only chef in the kitchen who's ever done any real Haitian stuff.
And there's a little bit of perhaps foreshadowing there. I don't know if anyone was, you know, who's editing the show knew, you know, knows the outcome of Restaurant Wars at this point and was dropping clues. Because this is just factually true from watching the show. The executive chef does often go home in Restaurant Wars, right? It's like executive chef and front of house.
Yeah.
Those are the two spots that are danger spots.
Right,
front
of
Restaurant
house
Wars.
Because none of them are good at it. And executive chef because they blame the person in charge if something goes really wrong.
Exactly.
Sure.
And yeah, so to me it is sort of a high jeopardy situation for Gregory in terms of getting eliminated, given that he's going to be making it's a high concept restaurant and he could pay the price for poor execution on the part of, say, Leanne, You know what I mean?
Yep.
So,
yep. The one other thing I wanted to say about this episode is I didn't think they made nearly good enough use of Danny Trejo. Although I did appreciate that instead of product placement, they just had machete placement.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I thought machete placement was fine.
No, that part was funny. But like Danny Trejo himself, somehow I wanted more of him. And I also think, for what it's worth, you know, and thank goodness for her because she really shit the bed on the elimination challenge. Stephanie made a keen observation and was like, every single person in this stupid kitchen is doing fish tacos. Let me put some lamb on this bitch. And yep. It was really smart and it worked.
Yeah. And I, you know, also because we, you know, shitted on her a bunch already. I also knew, I'm like, oh, Leanne is going to nail this fish taco. And she did. So good for her.
Good for her. You got third place in a quick fire one time. Great job, Leanne. You're killing it. See you next week in the bottom of the elimination somehow. I am to understand you did watch Last Chance Kitchen this week.
I watched three of them tonight, so I am fully caught up on the last kid.
So, if I remember correctly, Nini is your last remaining draftee for your fantasy league.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's out for me. I'm done.
Hold on. Do you get Last Chance Kitchen points?
We do not. We do not get Last Chance Kitchen points.
That's an oversight.
So, yeah.
It's part of the game.
Maybe, but whatever. It's not making up for who... It's not making up for whatever Melissa and Kevin and Gregory have been doing. You know what I mean?
No, I mean, it's not. But still, you should pitch that for next season.
Yeah, perhaps.
Can I get
perhaps.
In? Or is this like family only?
I bet you could get in next year. Yeah.
All right.
We'll have to figure out the contested math there. If we go to six. But I'm all in favor. I'm all in favor, and you can't do any worse than I did. So, so don't worry about it. I am glad Last Chance Kitchen wise that Nini is still kicking around because she's just a delightful television presence.
Did you stay till the very last moment of Last Chance Kitchen?
I sure
she
did.
Had the line of the episode.
I sure did.
I don't watch any Housewives, so I don't totally. My wife had to explain it to me somewhat. But what's the other lady's name?
Nini Leakes.
Nini Leakes.
She is all right. So I don't watch Housewives either. I don't think I've ever seen a whole episode, but I know enough to know that she is like the most famous of the like bitchy housewives. You know what I mean? So
yes, I am aware. I when I was shown her picture, I was like, oh yeah, I know that lady.
Yeah, I believe from Real Housewives of Atlanta, if I'm not mistaken.
No idea. I know she was on Glee.
So, but yeah, and she did the hair flip to go with the line, which I thought was really great.
It was. She's so delightful, and I want the best for her, and I'm glad she's on my television, even if it's just the internet part for 10 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, as she said, it's a long road back in terms of now she's got to beat the next, six or seven to get back in.
I don't know when they pull the trigger again, but we'll see. It's going to be a lot of good chefs going through.
Yeah.
There, man.
Yeah, exactly. And it'll be a tougher group of chefs when you look at who is left. Eric had a bad day, but for the most part, I'd say that it's been fairly close to a meritocracy, right? Like when you look at the chefs that are around, it's mostly been the chefs that have cooked the best so far this year.
I mean, I'm partial to Eric. I think he's better than a few people who are left, but it's been pretty good. I mean, if it was a true meritocracy, I really do think Leanne would have been gone. If this was like,
look, I said mostly Eric's a better cook than Stephanie or Leanne. For sure. But, you know, when you look at who's left, it's mostly a deserving group, I would say.
No question. And like, you can see it in the judges most weeks, certainly last week, if not this week, you can see they're just like, this is all so good. You know, we're nitpicking to send someone home.
They are pleased with themselves. That is the other thing about Nini. It was a tough beat for her to be in there in the first place, but you know, when she started burning things all over two Top Chef kitchens. So I'm like, all right, I get it.
yeah, I love you, but that's a lot of like burnt pieces you've thrown in the garbage in the last 3 hours.
It was a roller coaster of emotions, those two Last Chance kitchens. She's like burning things and saving them repeatedly.
Yeah. Yeah, but you know, she is creative and interesting and just a delightful presence.
I agree. Speaking of delightful presences, let's jump into the challenge. I have to caveat before we get started. So, you know, I watched this on DVR, and the DVR ended at 60 minutes.
Oh, no.
And so I don't know, you know, as it was ending, it was kind of like Bear talking about Kayla. And I don't know if that was the cliffhanger or if there was a whole bunch more episode.
Oh my God.
That DirecTV didn't plan for. So,
oh no, Derek.
Did they show an elimination?
Oh my God.
Oh no.
I don't know how we can do this.
Oh, it's that big a deal. Was there like half an hour that got cut off?
Bear, so when you say Bear talking about Kayla,
it was like basically talking about he wasn't talking about Kayla, he was talking to Kayla's boyfriend, you know,
about
how he's stealing her, yeah, and then it just went delete.
Do you want me to spoil this for you? So much happened.
Oh no. Yeah, go ahead and spoil it. Whatever, we'll talk about it.
So Bear and Kayla made out in the bathroom.
That's not really a spoiler. I mean, I didn't see it happen, but it was so clear it was going to happen.
And there was like some there's just, oh my God. Okay. So that's the long and short of that part of it. They went to elimination. Jay was down there, obviously. And it was, oh my God. If I say balls in, do you know what it is?
Balls in. Is it that one where they like, where it's like the Oklahoma drill or whatever, where they kind of like run through the tunnel and.
There's no, not the hall brawl. It's the one with the like barrel.
Cylinders and they have to drop the ball in the barrel.
The barrel, like, in the middle of a circle. And, you know, they're all geared up. And one of them has the ball and is trying to score, and the other's trying to defend, and they, like, trade off and try to score points.
And did Rogan go in like he was kind of talking, like, plotting to?
Rogan went in, and when he got down there, TJ was like, you guys are probably familiar with balls in, but because this shit is crazy. This is balls in, except the ball is on fire.
Right.
So they put on fire suits and TJ lights this like foul looking black round thing with a blowtorch. And Jay picks it up. And, oh, God, he runs into the outer circle, and Rogan's waiting for him, and the moment he crosses in, he hesitates. And it cuts to Rogan's ITM, and Rogan's like, Jay walked in, and he hesitated, and that was a big mistake. And Rogan hits him in the middle of his body, sort of like a football player. Spins around and sort of lifts and body slams him down, mostly on his chest. Just outside the circle, the ball goes, the like fiery ball goes trickling away. Rogan stands up using Jay's helmet in the ground as like a, like pushes himself up off Jay's helmet.
Oh no.
And Jay just is not moving. and then like slowly lifts his arm, and people are like, "Oh my god!" And someone's like, "I think he broke his arm." And then the episode ends.
Oh wow! So they didn't even show the result. It's just the
just Jay dead.
And
TJ is walking over to him like, "Uh-oh, like bro, are you okay?" Like it's a does Jay go to the hospital and will he survive cliffhanger.
Wow, he's not going to go to the hospital. He's going to get up and compete.
Oh,
that's what's
going
to happen.
I don't know. I don't know.
Seen them pull this move before.
Yes, but I'm telling you, like, this was bad. This was bad. It was a really bad hit and a vicious slam. And then he stood up off his face. It was, I mean, Rogan talked to, you know, this is Rogan's first elimination. And there's been a lot of talk about that. And Rogan talked a lot about wanting to put his hands on Jay. And good Lord, he put his hands on him and he put his face in the dirt. My challenge game respect level for Rogan is peaking.
Wow. It was it a CT-esque elimination performance to that point?
It literally was 5 seconds. Oh, yeah. Jay ran in the circle, paused for just a half second like he was deciding which way to juke, and Rogan just ended his life.
Yeah.
So,
you know,
it didn't
the producers...
even, it wasn't even as long as CT carrying Johnny Bananas into the trash can so many years ago.
Which is still a GOAT moment. That's like the Jordan's layup with the switch to the left hand against the Lakers.
Yes,
the
exactly.
Challenge.
Yeah, yeah. So Rogan here was like Steph Curry pulling up from the logo to beat Oklahoma City. You know,
okay, gotcha.
Like it was shocking and so fast and so violent. And I don't know if Jay's alive or not. And that's that. Like every part of it was why I watched the challenge.
That feels like a little bit of a producer sabotage on Jay, right? Like because they knew he was going to be in. So when you set it up for balls in, you know what I mean? Like that's a physical game. You know, you're putting like the smallest guy in the house in a physical game.
It's a tough
in
spot
a situation where people want to jump in and get him. You know what
that's
I mean?
That's true, but I'll say this:
if you want Jay around, you do puzzles, right?
Well, but I'll say this, man. Jay's going in. Like, I think Rogan made the point during the episode. Like, I think his exact phrasing was, "I believe Jay is starting to realize that he's going to go in every time until he goes home."
Goes home. Yep.
And
yep.
If that's like, it's got to be physical eventually. You know, you can't give him a puzzle every damn time. And frankly, he won two pretty physical eliminations. So
that's true.
Credit to him. I think he's a good rookie, but it's not looking good for him in terms of this particular elimination.
And as much as Rogan says that's true, it's not going to be true, right? Because at some point, if he keeps he's going to collect too many skulls. You know what I mean? Like people, right? Well, I mean, maybe not if he's going home now, but right, that
well,
would
but
happen if
thing
he kept
is,
setting him in week after week.
Except if you're wanting to go in and get your skull, who do you want to go against? I mean, I understand he just beat, you know, my Israeli friend and CT. But, I mean, it's him or Swaggy.
I guess. I don't know. I'd take my chances against Wes at some point. You know what I mean?
Wes would have ragdolled.
Much as I love Wes.
Wes would have ragdolled Jay, too, though.
I'm just saying, if, you know, two or three eliminations from now, you know what I mean? If Jay's still
right.
beating people.
But that's the point.
You might
like,
try somebody else.
You're not going to go five straight eliminations without a headbanger. And I'm not sure there's anybody. Granted, Rogan is probably one of his worst options. I'm not sure there's anybody in the house Jay would have beaten in this elimination.
I suppose, yeah. But, you know, I mean, he beat CT and was basically a physical contest. Like, that was not really, like, a test of mental ability. So... Who
no,
knows?
Neither of the ones he won were tests of mental ability, but they also were tests of, you know, sort of specific things that could that his skills were more useful in, where like just the who's stronger contest, there's always every three or four eliminations there's gonna be a who's stronger. There just is.
Right. Yeah, no, that's gonna happen. Anything else jump out at you from this episode? For me, it was the Zach appearance.
Right? Yeah.
We speculated on Zach.
Yeah, always nice to see Zach, and I'm sure Zach's appearance guarantees relationship drama.
I was legitimately surprised that they're still together and that they're talking about family and that he said, "I love you" on camera. Like, yes. All of those things surprised me.
But that also, there's no doubt in my mind, like, the fight is coming somehow, some way. As supportive as he seemed just then, some crazy shit's going to go down.
Yeah, I also think it was one of those little moments that was very revealing about the challenge.
Yeah.
Makes in people that,
crazy.
It makes people crazy. And also, like, you know, where we're like, well, where's Zach? He's not on it because he doesn't want to be on it. She doesn't want to be either on it either. But one of them had to go because they need the money. You know what I mean? And that's the thing about being on the challenge is that you have to be in a life position, right? And this is true for, you know, The Bachelor and a lot of other reality shows, that you have to be in a life position where you can put everything away for, you know, 2-3 months at a time. So right. Unless you own a company, which I think is like the position that Wes is in, mm-hmm. which is fairly unique among the rest of these people.
Yeah.
Then you're basically not doing a lot, right?
Or you know,
you're doing this.
If
you're on
you
the
become
circuit.
As popular as Johnny Bananas and can parlay it into some silly TV hosting gig or what have you, you know.
Right.
But there's not a That's lot of people game. Who get to that either.
But really what you're doing is appearances and Instagram ads and, yep. you know, right? Like that's pretty much what you do. And you sit around and wait, you know what I mean?
That's it.
Yep. You know, or if you're Corey, you're on Teen Mom or whatever.
He is.
Yeah. He's like, he's one of the baby daddies on the, one of those shows.
Jesus Christ.
Which I only know from seeing a commercial during the challenge.
Wow. Well, I'll tell you this. He is not a smart man, that Corey. That stands out from this episode.
Yeah, that's fair.
the level of danger really is ratcheted up.
Yeah. That's why he and Nelson, I think, are a good pair.
Yeah, just a couple of meathead idiots. But Corey not being able to figure out how to detonate the bomb and then nearly walking into the bomb as he detonated it was perfect.
Also some great equation work.
Oh my God.
from a whole lot of people.
Oh my God. Well, also it's like how great who is I mean, all right. When do you think where would your cutoff be for like the challenge, the true challenge veterans? Like who does that trigger in your head?
Well, I mean, is that a little bit like a true Yankee? Because
I don't know.
Corey is by any rights like a challenge veteran at this point. Right. What has he done, like 4 or 5? But no, you don't think of him in the same way that you think of Wes or Bananas, you know
right.
what I mean? Or
to me,
Nani.
Or Nani or Anissa or Ashley.
Yeah.
Like, there's that crew, right, that really goes back. CT. Like, outside of that crew, is Bear the most valuable, like, challenge young player? He's got to be, right? Like, I love Kyle, but Bear is unbelievable television.
Yeah, no, he's fantastic television. I mean, look, you got to talk about Rogan and Dee. Honestly,
yeah, you're right.
You're talking about new people,
Rogan and Dee are both on the short list of that.
But yeah, other than that, it's Bear.
Man, it's Bear. He's so good, and he's just good enough at the challenges that. And he also, for what it's worth, quite hilariously, he really gets upset when he loses. Because for all that bluster and silliness, like, he really does seem to think he should win every time.
Yep. Yeah, no, it's interesting. There's like the mix of sincerity and ridiculousness with him is it's delightful. I also happen to think that Kayla is like pretty good television as well.
Yeah,
I wouldn't say I wouldn't say she's a great person.
No,
per se.
No, not at all.
But she's got some lines, and she's got this like gear, this like mean gear.
Yeah.
That like she goes to a place that like not a lot of people go to sometimes.
It's true.
Which I think yeah can be fun on these kinds of shows. So I feel bad because apparently the DVR cut off all the good parts. I was my takeaway coming into this was like not that great an episode.
You gotta do a plus 30 minutes on your DVR just in case.
Well, that I did notice right off the top. Usually these, it's 90 minutes, and this one was like, I was like, oh, only an hour this week. Okay,
that's good. Weird.
Yeah, I don't know what happened.
My DVR has
also
you.
Been taping the Late Show with James Corden, inexplicably every night. There's no season pass.
Weird.
I've checked.
Can you like
and yet
go
every
back...
night without fail? It tapes James Corden.
Can you go back and watch on demand? The challenge now that we're like a few days past it?
I know it's kind of difficult, I think, to I've tried this before, but I will definitely make an attempt to see the rest of this,
because I'm telling you, like, I really don't think Jay's getting back in the game.
All right, I really don't. I've seen the challenge pull this move before, especially when they cliffhang it.
So have I, but it was, I mean, it looked bad, man.
All right, I want to see it. I want to see it. All right, so quickly, Last Dance chapters 3 and 4. Bill Simmons and Ryan Russillo ruined my takeaway a little bit from this.
Rodman isn't from these.
Yeah, which I just think is wrong. I just think it's like a wrong, like that's a them take, you know what I mean?
Okay. So like, here's where I think they're right. So much of this Rodman stuff is so well covered.
That's correct.
It's not that Rodman is one of the most interesting people ever to hit the public consciousness, much less the NBA.
Yeah, so, he's just not articulate. That's all it is.
Well,
he can't really explain what makes him interesting.
Yeah,
but he still makes interesting choices.
He did. He's lived an interesting life. There's two problems with Dennis Rodman, besides the fact that it's if you watch the Rodman doc, very little, if any, of this was new to you. But there's
correct.
Two problems.
Although
one
Carmen
is,
Electra was
an incredible story.
Standout performance from Carmen Electra.
Yes, but it doesn't even – Dennis barely remembers that. So there's two problems with Dennis. One is he likes to talk about how there's a secret Dennis Rodman. And I think that may have been true at one point. People didn't really understand or get to know Dennis, and there was a lot more to him. The second problem is he strikes me as having reached a level of brain fry that guy no longer exists. And
quite
that
possible.
All we have left is the empty shell of the public Dennis Rodman. And, hearing the most interesting part of the Dennis Rodman episode to me was when he actually started talking about rebounding. And it was incredibly inarticulate, but it at least gave you the understanding of how deeply and specifically he thought about the art of rebounding the basketball, which was really his true genius.
Yeah, well, 100%. His true genius. That and I think he had a certain flair for publicity.
Oh, no doubt. I also thought it was illuminating how much, at least how much, this documentary suggests Madonna had an effect on those decisions.
Yeah, I agree with that. More so than I think than the 30 for 30, which I think got into Madonna fairly extensively, suggested that. Did you think it was interesting? Like, everybody talks about the he went to Vegas in the middle of the season, and you could never do that now. And you saw these comments from NBA players like, did LeBron not take a 2-week vacation in the middle of the season in Cleveland like 3 years ago? Like, that happened, right? Did we all just forget about this?
It's a little different.
He went to South Beach for like 2 weeks.
Granted,
it was excused, but so was Rodman in the beginning.
Well, it was excused, and it was sort of a working vacation, and it was explicitly to get his body some rest at a time when, you know, that's a more accepted notion. Rodman literally went off the reservation to binge drink with a porn star.
Well, Carmen Electra's not a porn star, but yeah.
That's true. I get what you mean. To binge drink with a sexy TV host.
Correct. But I also think that it's, you know, he was seeking a rest from, you know, the...
Yes.
And lots of other people talked about this, the grind of...
Yeah, Derek,
the
listen,
attention that came along with being the Bulls.
It's not even just that. It's the grind of playing all those games all those years in a row. And I do not begrudge Dennis Rodman his mental rehabilitation time. However, I think we can safely say if LeBron had spent any part of that 2 weeks not in a gym in South Beach, but partying with Carmen Electra and strippers in Vegas, it would have had a very different reaction today than the one it had then, which was none, because nobody knew about it.
Yeah, well, that's certainly true, and that's clearly a difference between what happens then and what happens now, for sure.
I mean, it's remarkable that the way sports was reported then was like there was a gentleman's agreement that I guarantee you Sam Smith knew about it, but he didn't write about it.
Yeah.
And on Basketball Reference, there's two games Dennis Rodman missed. And by the way, those are the only two games he missed that year. He played 80 of 82 games. And he missed.
And he by missed, the way, at full speed, right?
Yes. Like, and Dennis not always at full speed, but he missed only those two games. They're listed. The first one it says did not dress, and the second it says not with team. And then he comes back and he goes like in the next five games, his rebound totals are something like 14, 22, 20, 22, and 18. So
yeah, I mean, the story about him coming back in practice also, I think, is you know,
well, that
illuminating
again,
as well.
Yeah, but that's the stuff we knew about. You know, that's the stuff, especially if you watch the 30 for 30. You know that Dennis Rodman physically was unmatched for his ability to abuse himself at night and bounce back the following morning.
Well, you know, if you see some of these stories, and at least from what I've heard from people who have seen more of the doc, and we get into some of them, you know, Michael Jordan stayed out really.
Oh, no. Jordan is like Dennis Rodman and Michael Jordan are both on that Mount Rushmore. Yeah, Allen Iverson, that might be the top three.
Yeah, I'm sure there's some 60s guys, you know, 70s guys we don't know about. But
I don't think they probably didn't actually bounce back that great. Just the level of competition wasn't that high.
That might be true. But we weren't there.
Yeah. But to me, the much more interesting episode was the Pistons, the Isaiah stuff.
Well, it's certainly the most illuminating when you watch, Jordan's reaction.
Yeah.
And by the way, that it's a brilliant trick of the director of this documentary.
Yes.
To have this footage that he's collected and then show it to these people right in front of them on camera to get those kind of like real in the moment reactions.
It's awesome.
You know. Yeah. Like those are some of the best moments of the doc, I think, you know.
No doubt. And look, obviously Michael Jordan is the star of this documentary. He's more or less in control of the documentary at some level. He controlled all of the footage for the 25 years or whatever it is since they shot it. But he really is the star of this in a way that I wasn't expecting, which is, and I feel like this is confirmed when we talked to Michael Wilbon on the radio show the other day, and he's a guy who is probably as close to Michael as anyone in the media.
Was he not surprised?
No, he said this really is this is the real Michael. Like the the Michael that he talks with after a couple cocktails at a bar is the one you're seeing in the couple of big interviews that the director got with him.
Yeah, well, he's got a whiskey with him the whole time.
Yeah, well, and a cigar. But it's not just that. He's just a normal guy you know what I'm saying? Like it feels like Michael put down the weight of his public image for this documentary.
And yeah, well, I mean, I think that's a lot of the purpose of it for him. But, because he's certainly aware of how petty he is and how petty he's going to come off, in all this. And I think for him, it was, he's looking at this. The reason why he finally said yes after so many years of saying no is because I think it's his chance to try to make people understand what it is that drives him, and that like the insane competitiveness,
Totally. But like, I also just think he, for whatever reason, he was made comfortable, and he's talking about it like he would talk to his friends at a bar about it. And that to me is such an incredible gift to be someone who, Michael Jordan has encapsulated and been this probably the central figure of my entire sports life. And I've never really seen this from him. I've never really seen extended moments of candor, I think it's pretty exciting. And to see him talk about this, and apparently they get into the conspiracy theories about his dad. Apparently they get into it all.
Yeah.
And I'm so excited.
I would assume the conspiracy theories about his suspension and all of that as well.
All that. And I'm very excited to see that and see what he has to say. And also just like, I feel like I have a better understanding of Michael Jordan from watching this to some degree. Even if it's just confirming things I thought about him, I feel like I know more. And that is, I think that's so cool. And the Piston saga is particularly interesting because that's the greatest obstacle of his career. I mean, the Detroit Pistons are the greatest obstacle of his career on the court.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to say that they were. That was the hump that he needed to get over. He had such a dominance over the rest of his contemporaries.
And that it really also illustrates the importance of Phil Jackson. The saga of loss and defeat and eventually overcoming the Pistons is a saga about Michael Jordan learning to acquiesce somewhat. It's about Michael Jordan realizing that Phil Jackson has the team's best interests in mind. And the one thing no one ever had to convince Michael Jordan of, well, one of several things, is that the most important thing was winning. Like, he may have thought for a long time that the best way to win was just for him to score 60 points. But when he realized that Phil was on to something and that this would help the team win, you didn't have to do a job of convincing him that that was the most important thing.
Yeah. Although it's weird, right? Because he bought into that, when he played for Dean Smith.
Well, but it's one thing to buy into winning, and it's another to buy into I'm the greatest player in the world, and the way we win is by me giving up the ball.
Yeah, but he thought that then, right? He obviously it's a little bit different in college. He wasn't quite Michael Jordan, but he was a pretty damn big deal in,
he was
in
very
college.
Good, but he wasn't he wasn't necessarily the best player on the team when he got there. You know what I'm saying? Like it took him a while.
When he got there, but by the time he left, I mean the guy was, he was on the 84 Olympic team as a college player, right? So
well, but that's the moment. Like, he played within the system at North Carolina, and I think that again, that speaks to
that's the old joke was Dean Smith is the only guy who could hold Michael Jordan under 20 points.
Right. But again, it speaks to the fact that like you didn't have to convince him that the most important thing was winning. And if he trusted you as a coach, as he obviously did Dean Smith, he would do what you told him because he believed it would get him to winning. And I think Doug Collins told him score. That's how we win. And Doug Collins wasn't totally wrong, but
no.
I do think they needed Phil to I think both Michael and the Bulls needed Phil to make the transition from Michael's team to the championship team.
I do think they sort of yada yada. DeCon's getting pushed out of the way by Phil Jackson.
Knifed in the back is probably a more accurate description.
Not the most important piece, but they definitely did pass up on that. I'm curious, and we can get out of here on this. Like, obviously, you grew up a Bulls fan, and I would assume a Jordan fan.
Sure.
But do you like Jordan?
As a person? I mean, how do you mean that?
Yeah, like you're spending all this time with him as a human being. Are you like, yeah, I like that guy?
I think, yes, I do. Now, there are... I do, yeah. There are things about him that are unsavory, undoubtedly. But, yeah, I like him. He strikes me as a fascinating and mostly decent dude.
Yeah, okay.
Hard-edged and demanding, but, you know, not the worst.
Yeah, I mean, look, not my type of dude. I got to respect him. You know, and obviously, look, the accomplishments speak for himself. He's a great.
Yeah, I mean, he's problematic.
Seems like it would really suck to be around him.
Well, see, I don't think it would now. I think it would have at many times sucked to be his teammate, but also then you're the teammate of the greatest player in the world and you're competing for titles. So, I mean, it's, you know, like Steve Kerr, who I truly believe is one of the most fundamentally decent people in the entire world of sports of all time.
Speaks very highly of the experience. Yeah.
He does. He really does.
Also got a fist fight with him. So.
That's right. I mean, I feel like I would feel about Jordan how Steve Kerr felt about Jordan.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I feel about Jordan how the same way I feel about Kevin Garnett. So I think that gives you an idea of where we are on the sides of that
divide.
Well,
there's a level of similarity there, man. There is.
Yep.
There is.
Yep. Although, well, at least I'm consistent.
Although your main complaint about Garnett's dirtiness doesn't really apply to Jordan.
Yes, that's correct. Does not really apply to Jordan, but just sort of the homicidal intensity.
Yep.
I think that's a thing they share. And a thing that I don't find attractive at all in a person.
Yeah, I don't know. I find it attractive in an athlete in a certain way. I think that's the difference between you and me.
Indeed. Let's move on to dispatches from elsewhere. Very curious to know what you thought about the finale of this. I guess we can talk about the series as a whole at some point, but
okay,
definitely took a little bit of a left turn there on that last episode.
Well, in many ways it takes a total turn, but you know, this one's a thinker, right? I mean, this show is a thinker, and part of what I thought was ultimately, what are we left with? And there's a part of me that says very little to nothing. But then there's another part of me that says kind of everything. What we're left with is an ambitious attempt to push. I mean, I think what Jason Segel tried to do here really is exactly what he said at the very beginning, what Octavio says at the very beginning, which is to make us them and to make us feel whatever this idea of divine nonchalance is. To essentially say that we are all in this goofy thing called life together, and look at us in our best moments. It's beautiful. And that's a very simple and kind of naive thing to make a whole television series about. But I have to say, like, as I thought about it in retrospect, I enjoyed the goofy journey so much that, like, I have to admit he is both right and, although somewhat corny, kind of wonderful. I think I loved it.
Ooh. See, yeah, I'm right with you on I enjoyed this goofy journey. Like, it was, you know, kind of like he said, and, you know, it was, I don't know about spooky, but it was surprising.
Spooky and surprises.
At times I thought it was really well made and often beautiful. The music was really great. There were some really interesting performances. Some of those characters stray moments and observations between them that I thought were really interesting.
What did he call
himself?
It's hard
for me to say that I loved the show, though.
What did the guy call himself? Sophisticated Squatch? Is that what it was?
I did like Sophisticated Squatch, yeah.
Like, there were just so many wildly bizarre touches to the show. I'm not saying this was a great show. I'm saying I think I loved it. You know what I mean? Like, I can't even necessarily in good conscience, like, recommend it out of hand to a random person. But how else do I describe a show that I so enjoyed watching and had so much interest in week to week, even if ultimately there isn't really even a serious attempt to pay off the like mysterious part of it at all?
Well, no, because it doesn't matter.
Exactly.
it never mattered, right?
Yeah, well, and
that's the thing about this journey is, like, I feel like I enjoyed the journey, and I would say if you're looking to go on a wild ride and you want a show that's going to like take you to some unexpected places, that's who I would recommend this for.
Right.
But I also felt it was much like it was mostly effective as long as I didn't think about it too much. You know what I mean?
Well, it's relatively frivolous. And the finale has the effect of making it so that even if you do think about it too much, it answers your complicated questions with a simple answer over and over again. So you just there's nowhere to go to think about it too deeply. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not even like it falls apart. It isn't there. There's nothing there.
What did you think about like the meta-ness of the, finale?
Well, I love a meta-narrative. So
talking to Jason Segel about his career and,
Yeah, it's a pretty simple, it's a simple metaphor, and I think it admits that it's a simple metaphor, right? Like, there's no subterfuge here. There's no pretending to have a depth it doesn't have. And I guess that's maybe why I feel comfortable saying I loved it, is that, like, it's a cute, ultimately, the whole package is this cute little thing that doesn't amount to much other than, that's nice. Like, it's a nice sentiment, and it was a bizarre, wild ride.
It was a bizarre, wild ride. Yeah, I can definitely see why Andre 3000 signed on.
And you know what? That is the one thing I do want to say. The acting, particularly from those four, but also, Richard Grant, I mean, the acting was the one thing that I thought never really failed throughout.
Yeah.
All of these people were totally convincing. All the characters were so distinct and specific, but fascinating people, and they
were you, but also not you.
Yes, and that's that's the thing. It's cute and trite, but they were, and like they were all exceedingly bizarre, but ultimately identifiable. You could identify with them. I just, that part of it to me was what made it really great.
I'm not down on the show.
No, I know. I know. But like real characters having real relationships amidst a madcap, like nonsensical story to me was really appealing.
Yeah. So would you say you liked this better than Lodge 49?
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
All right. That's a pretty strong endorsement right there, I think.
It is. But I liked it in much the same way as Lodge 49.
Yeah, well, I think they're very similar types of shows.
Yeah, stylistically,
Stylistically, yeah. I mean, there are also some real differences, but to me, they're pretty easily comparable, and not just because they air on the same network. Okay, Never Have I Ever.
Okay.
Did I get that right? I have
Yes, you keep saying
For whatever reason, I have a block about the name of this show.
Well, you keep telling me you have a block, and yet I've never heard you get it wrong, so I don't know what the issue is.
Well, I've been writing it down since we started talking. So that's definitely helped. This is the new series from Mindy Kaling about a young Indian girl in Sherman Oaks, I think it is.
Somewhere in the LA area, yeah.
Yeah, navigating her way through high school and trying to be popular. And how many episodes of this did you watch?
Four.
I think I hit three. But I found it some of the most charming stuff that Mindy Kaling has done.
Yeah, I mean, to be clear, she's not in it. But if you liked All the Boys I've Loved Before and you felt like it could have been a little raunchier, this is the show for you.
It also just feels a little bit more real to me than to All the Boys I've Loved Before, which is great.
Maybe. How many episodes did you watch?
I'm not just saying it's completely real. I'm just saying it feels a little more real.
Yeah, yeah. I think that may have more to do with like being able to build things out in a TV show as opposed to, some of the tropes you run into in a rom-com film. But either way, genre-wise,
I think, you know, there's clearly a lot of stuff about identity and things like that that are a little more missing from
To All the Boys.
To All the Boys. And they get into it a little bit in P.S., right? I can't believe how much I know about To All the Boys.
We know a lot. No, but I agree. This is more substantial. And being a little raunchier, I think, puts it a little more in our territory than To All the Boys I've Loved Before. I mean, I find it really funny, and I think a huge part of that is the lead actress is really quite wonderful.
Yeah, she's great. You know, I like her rivalry with the
with the Jew
in her class. Yes, with the Jew, which I assume is heading towards a romance at some point.
Perhaps,
I don't know if that happened in the episode that you and I watched, or that you watched that I didn't. But
no.
It seems like we're getting there.
Yeah, I mean, oh, God. Oh, I don't want to spoil a great joke for you, but I wonder if you saw it's funny. It's a funny show. I guess I don't want to spoil the joke just in case you haven't seen it yet, but it's a really funny show, and if you like sort of the high school milieu, I think this is for you.
As you know, I do enjoy the high school milieu, and I will say I only watched three, but that was almost intentional because I realized I was like, oh, I could devour this thing in one day.
Yeah, you can blast right through it if you want to.
In the right setting, it's pretty bingeable. So, yeah, that's a thumbs up from me. And then, what'd you think of the Return of Parks and Rec?
Oh, okay. Look, I mean, It was nice. This was not a good episode of Parks and Recreation. But it was nice to see characters I love. There were definitely some laughs. Probably most of them during the Lil Sebastian song.
Yeah. Although I did enjoy the... honestly, the Jason Mantzoukas.
Jason Mantzoukas. The whole Purd... Like the whole TV portion of this with Purd and with
Purd was great.
Joan,
and
Joan,
Jammer
and Joe, what's her name? Joan Calamezzo.
Yes, Joan Calamezzo.
Those were all really good. Purd is just such an incredible character.
The Chirons on Purd are awesome.
Oh my God.
Fantastic.
Yeah. No, that's all really good. You're right. So there were laughs, but like, this is not going to be a top 10 episode of Parks and Recreation, but it was enjoyable.
Yeah. And look, and in fairness, I think it would be really difficult to make a top 10 episode of Parks where you physically can't have any of the characters together.
Exactly. I thought they handled it pretty well. I think the conceit was pretty funny. You know, I mean, they obviously, like, you kind of have to place it in a COVID-19 world to pull this off, but like, you know, even the little things like Anne is volunteering, so she's isolating from the rest of the house, you know.
Yep.
All that sort of
stuff. And Perkins. I mean, it's worth it just to see Ann Perkins on the screen and be able to go, Ann Perkins,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, or to hear Ron Swanson say, I've been social distancing since I was four.
Yeah. Well, and I like how they Megan Mullally got in there and made an appearance, too.
Yeah, that was pretty excellent. And then, you get a little John Ralphio. You just get to see all your old friends.
Exactly. That's what it was. You're getting to hang with your old friends again, which is beautiful. And it's new entertainment in a time where that is lacking. So thumbs up.
Thumbs up. Glad it happened. And it went to a good cause.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
Donate to
Feeding America.
Feeding America.
Is the name of that cause. And we actually spent a bunch of today trying to raise money for those guys as well.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
If I was a better person, I could tell you the number to text right now, but you can go to radiocares.org if you want to give some money to Feed America. And that's open till May 3rd.
Nice.
That much I remember. I said it like 25 times today.
Radiocares.org. Eventually the words lose all meaning when you say them that many times.
It's true. But yeah, it's do a good thing. 'Cause Feeding America, they have the ability to get food to food banks and stretch your dollar in a way that you cannot. And as I say this, I'm looking at MSNBC with the sound off, and they're running a story with a food bank line that is literally stretching for miles, talking about over 30 million Americans out of work. So,
yeah.
Help you know, the phrase now more than ever gets banged around a lot these days. But this is a point where it actually applies. So.
Help if you can.
Yeah, help if you can.
Did you deliberately save the worst for last?
wait, what did I miss something?
Yeah.
In all this? What yes. did I miss?
Bad education.
Oh, you thought that was the worst.
Well.
So then no, the answer is no, I did not deliberately save it. I forgot to write it down, for one.
So, Bad Education, HBO movie. The story at like elevator pitch or maybe even treatment length is remarkable. People embezzling $11 million from a public school district fairly recently is wild. It's a wild story. It's the most money anyone's ever stolen and much of it by two individual people. Incredible.
Yeah, one of them was living a pretty wild double life that went beyond just the embezzlement plot. You know what I mean? So,
well, I guess he was, but we didn't find out much about that. And we didn't find out much about how they pulled it off or where it started or what. They told a story that to me felt like adjacent to an interesting news article. But there was almost nothing interesting to me about this movie. And it wasn't bad. It wasn't a bad movie at all. In fact, I thought it was quite well acted, pretty well written. But I just don't know. I don't know that there was a story there in the like period of plot that they covered. It was a news article acted out convincingly, but I don't know. At the end of it, I felt like I don't know that I needed that movie. I don't know why it exists.
I think I enjoyed it more than you did, although I will say a lot of that was based on I thought it was a pretty tremendous performance from Hugh Jackman. That helped a lot. But I think you know enough, right? Like, I don't think the how they did it is all that glamorous, right? Like, they took extra expenses and falsified receipts, and you saw what's his face from American Vandal, doing the contracting work in the, town, they use a lot of credit cards and just sort of, didn't really have anybody checking on him. The how of it is not all that interesting.
Yeah. I
right?
guess I don't mean logistically how so much as like how it came about, Like, how do you start this? How does it escalate? Like, what? Like, I don't know.
Well, there was a little monologue in there, right? About how, I did this one thing this one time, and it was like, you know, $100 and nobody noticed. And then, you know, a week later I was doing it again. And then next thing you know, it's, you're right. Like that's, and that is typically how those things start. Also, not all that interesting. I feel like what's interesting is, you know, the pressures that these people were under in this particular town, you know, as administrators, the life that they were living and trying to keep up with. And, you know, there's sort of singular minded focus on what the school did for the community and what they felt that justified. And then the fact that a student paper was the one that really got to the bottom of all this. That's probably the most remarkable thing about the story.
Agreed. And that was cool, but I didn't feel like there was enough there. You know what I mean? I guess I didn't get the parts of the story that I thought might've been more in. I don't know. Maybe it wasn't as exciting as I was hoping. I'm not quite sure what it was, but it just didn't come together as a movie for me.
I will say I did go back and read the New York Magazine article upon which this is based, just because I wanted to know more about the real thing. And I don't know if that's a good sign or a bad sign in light of sort of this discussion. But I did enjoy the experience of watching it. I think it went down easy. And like I said, I really thought Hugh Jackman was great. I thought Allison Janney was great. Ray Romano. Ray Romano's on a bit of a heater, right?
Ray Romano character actor is much preferable to me than like the whatever it was called, the Romano show.
The Everybody Loves Raymond.
Oh yeah, that's what it was called. My bad. Shows you how much of I watched.
There you go. I didn't watch any of that either. But I did not see this coming. You know, he could do this or a freaking Scorsese movie, what was the show with the record company that we tried to watch for a minute?
Vinyl.
But he was good in Vinyl. He was probably one of the best parts of Vinyl, I thought.
Agreed.
So,
yeah, no, he's been, and you know, The Big Sick, he's had some really good performances in like character actor roles. It's a nice second act for Ray Romano.
Yeah, good for Ray. Good for Ray.
Yeah. Turns out everybody does love Raymond.
Indeed. All right, it's now past 1 o'clock over here in the Midwest. So let's get the hell out of here and do some homework.
All right, what do we got other than Top Chef Challenge and more Last Dance?
Yeah, well that's plenty to start with, but we're gonna throw some more on top of that. There's a Hulu show that a lot of people have been buzzing about called Normal People. That is a British production. Is that correct? It takes place in Ireland?
Yes.
Yes.
I don't know how that all shakes out over there, but I believe it originally aired on BBC Three.
It's a coming of age story based on a popular novel that I'm not familiar with, but I've heard it's quite good. So we're going to check that out. HBO's got a new show about girl skaters called Betty. Female skaters, I guess would be the proper way to say that. I'm very excited about this. It's a delightful trailer. I don't know if you've seen it while watching Insecure or whatever.
I'm into it.
But yeah, it gave it off a real kids vibe, but smarter, you know?
Funnier.
And a little funnier. And yeah, I'm very excited to see what this is about. There's also a show on Amazon called Upload. And this is from Greg Daniels of The Office. It's an afterlife show.
Yep.
And Billions back.
Finally.
I'm excited for Billions, but I'm also a little curious to see where they go. You know? I feel like that might be a show that's running out of places to go.
Yeah. Do they have an end point? Do you know?
I don't know if they have an end point. You know, I know enough people who are compliment adjacent, but I should probably find that out.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like it's the kind of show that has a choice between ending soon and being a pretty great show or continuing for another 5 seasons and kind of becoming a slightly lesser show, but still getting a lot of money made for everybody.
Yeah, it's a show with a wealth of great characters, and a lot of people can coast on that for a long time. I suspect that they will not, despite the fact that it's on Showtime, which is seems to be a venue for really being able to coast endlessly on a few great characters. So, so we'll see. We'll see how it plays out. But I think this will be the season that probably really lets you know. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that's right, and I'm excited to kick it off this weekend. And, boy, once again, we've just overloaded ourselves, so I'm going to go put some of that on the television probably in the next 10 minutes.
Yeah, can we start now?
Okay, bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling, and the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.